Jim Moore, my fellow Brickman fellow, what I know about you mainly is that you've been thinking ahead of the business and technology curve for a long time, especially in the global information game, and also that you're alive to the spiritual vibrations all around us. So locate us in this blogosphere, Blogistan. We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto, but where the hell are we?
Wow, Chris, I think we're at an amazing time, right? I mean, we're at the time when somehow collectively around the planet, we really are creating a new kind of a mind. And it may be a mind that's actually quite scary, or it may be a mind that's quite wonderful. But we really are creating a kind of a new mind.
I like it. You didn't say place. You said time and mind.
For a long time, people have been communicating more and more and more. And then for the last 100 years, we've been adding technology to that mix. And now we really are reaching critical mass in terms of a global platform that starts to connect up not all the 6.3 billion people on the planet, but probably, I don't know, 500 million to a billion people maybe. But it's heading out to more. And it's also getting deeper and richer. And so, an example would be, I put my blog up at the Berkman Center site. And if I'm writing on it, I might typically be sitting at home. And I write something, say, at 3 a.m., and maybe the next day sometime, I get on Technorati and I look at who's linking to my blog.
You're vain, like me.
Well, it's not just vanity. It's that then you find amazing things. So last week when I did it, bingo, here's this guy in New Zealand. And I go to the guy's site, and he's going, yeah, Jim Moore just posted this thing this morning, and it's really interesting, and I like what he said. But, you know, when is Jim going to start a blog on technology and poverty? Because that's what he's into that I really think he should be writing on. And he was writing, like, to me personally, okay? This is a person I've never met, never heard of, okay? And he's writing as if I'm right there. And, in fact, I get there.
Jim, how do we know it's deeper and better? It is further and faster, but who says it's getting deeper?
We don't know that it's deeper, okay? You can take the Thomas Friedman point of view that actually there's a lot of hate on the web, and there is. I mean, when I've had hits on the web, I get my share of really awful stuff as well. You know, we talk about smart mobs, a wonderful Howard Rheingold phrase, but, mob really has a kind of an image to it. If we think about wise mobs or unwise mobs, maybe that's more germane. That is the kind of problematique here, which is, as we get more connected by media, how do we get more wise?
Yeah, there's a lot of hostility. There's a lot of received opinions. There's a lot of confusion, it seems to me, between the speed with which you can shoot out an opinion and the depth of an idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, okay. I mean, again, we're at the kind of beginning of trying to study the sort of the neurology of this collective mind. And one of the things I did at one point in my life was do neurophysiology, and there's this interesting notion of neuronal recruitment, which is kind of fundamental to understanding the brain. And the notion is that as a kind of stimulus comes into the brain, various parts of the brain that might have an interest in that stimulus become kind of recruited to it and begin to help collectively make sense of it. And what we have happening now on the web is a kind of rapid recruitment phenomena. So people can get recruited to a particular meme or a particular idea and fast, okay? Mm-hmm. So people are now getting recruited to Howard Dean as an idea,
right.
Or they can get recruited to Second Superpower as an idea or whatever. So that kind of neuronal recruitment's happening a lot. Now, the question that begs and the question you're asking is, okay, once you get all that recruited, you know, then kind of what is the processing that goes on? And what's the kind of dialogical processing that goes on between those parts of the brain and a human being, or the kind of collective body, the body politic in the world? And I think we don't know much about that. I mean, I think this is a really, it seems very abstract, but I think this is actually where we live more and more these days.
I'd like you to take it one day at a time. What you do on the web, what you see, who you meet, what are you learning about the rules of this game, the anthropology of this space, the manners, the wisdom, the opinion? Where do you begin?
Well, to me, there's something kind of incredibly fascinating for me. Still, by the way, as a relatively new blogger, I started blogging last April 1st. You know, April Fool's Day was my first blog. It's very intimate for me to sit down at my computer and write. That's a very intimate act. And something I've been doing for a long time. I mean, I've been writing, lots of things on the computer over the years. Now it's a public act, okay, or close to a public act. And so one of the things that's been interesting over the last few months is just wrestling with what is that about? You know, like, what do I put up there? You know, do I put up poetry? Do I put up my sex life? Do I put up, you know, the weather? You know, or do I put up deeper thoughts? And if I put up deeper thoughts, you know, how thoughtful is the thought? You know, how much editing do I put in? Another issue is, do I take what I think are my best ideas, ideas that might be developed into a whole book, and do I put them in schematic form up on the web? And isn't that in a way a sort of a moral issue there? You know, on the one hand, I feel like, well, if I put them up there, I'm kind of scooping myself. Okay. But on the other hand, if I don't put them up there, I might be slowing down the collective thought of the blogosphere. So, right? And maybe that's egotistical, but probably is. But
who are you meeting out there? Who do you discover?
I've discovered some fascinating people. Joey Ito, who you've interviewed, you know, is one of those people who's kind of living in what he calls P-time. He's living in a reality where he has multiple feeds all the time, not just from blogs, but from instant messaging and from, you know, IRC chat and so forth. I'm meeting people like Joey who are beginning to be able to develop their own personal organizations. He's got a quote, posse of like 50 people who in some sense work collectively with him on his tasks. Doesn't pay them. They work 24/7, never meets them. I'm meeting kind of super innovators who are living in this space and developing new kind of forms of their own personal practice. So that's one thing I'm meeting. I'm also meeting very touching human beings. I got an email from this woman who runs a website called Ophelia and Me. And she's basically housebound due to illness. She lives on the coast of England with her dog and her computer. She had read one of my pieces and kind of wrote me something, and it was very moving. And I went to her blog and was able to read about her whole struggle with her illness. And you know, so I kind of wrote about her and wrote to her, and that's developed into kind of a relationship, which is really kind of amazing. So, you know, there's a human voice, a human touch on the web. There are people doing really interesting, innovative things.
Jim, you made an amazing debut with a blog on the second superpower back in April, start of the war, start of your blog, in which you broadly argued that there was a vast mass which has the web in common, although they're not all online, that hadn't been consulted, didn't like this war. You could certainly argue that they've been vindicated in their suspicions about the weapons of mass destruction, the difficulties of occupying a big country, and all of that. I keep wondering, what do we hear from the second superpower 6 months later? Who's going to empower the second superpower? And what do they do now?
You know, times have really changed from last spring. You know, I wrote that piece because I had a sense that there were, I had more than a sense. The polls showed there were many, many people in the United States and certainly around the world, there were many, many more who thought this was just a terribly, you know, ill-conceived of idea, the war in Iraq. And more than that, felt that the United States was acting the bully and you know, not exerting effective leadership or creative leadership or wise leadership in the world. So, and I guess my fundamental intuition was that there were many, many, many of us, but we couldn't express our views through the apparatus of nation states and through the ways even in which nation states come together at the UN. And that what we needed to do was find some way to express ourselves, some way to get political participation that went outside of the national system, that wasn't a nation. And that in a way we were doing that on the web, and we were doing that with peace marches, and that we were, if you looked at it right, we were kind of forming a new polis, a new kind of democratic institution that was global, that was more participative, that was less captured by special interests, and that actually was starting to have a voice. And it didn't have enough voice in the case of the Iraq War to stop the war, but, you know, it had enough voice to sort of slow things down, and it had enough voice to join with the French and the Germans and others, and Kofi Annan, to try to put the brakes on. And I was also sensing that in other venues it was having a voice, for instance, with the Landmine Treaty, or in the Kyoto Treaty on Global Warming. In those treaty organizations, this kind of informal sector, made up of citizen activists, NGOs, you know, all sorts of kind of people, they were actually coming together to be more and more powerful. And the thing that I felt was important was that we see ourselves that way, and that we get a clear image of both our current power and also our potential power, and that we then think about an agenda for working on that, and that we think about how to enable ourselves better by communication technology, how to work on kind of images of leadership and ways in which the world might rethink what we're doing, and also that we think about personally how to
develop. I like the way you put it, and you could certainly argue that the second superpower should feel good about itself. It had a right intuition.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to empower it?
Well, one of the things that's empowering it now is this combination of web technology and self-consciousness. And we see it in the Dean campaign particularly. I've been fascinated by the Dean campaign, been involved in it, and it is a kind of an extraordinary swarming together of progressives. And I think in a very real sense, it's landing on the Dean candidacy rather than being stimulated by the Dean candidacy, but at least they're open to it and they're accepting it.
Yep.
And people are getting excited by that. They're getting excited by donating through Move On. They're getting excited by being involved in meetups. I mean, it's really happening. And so I think that is a very clear, very exciting manifestation of second superpower
mm-hmm.
at this time.
Is that the vessel now?
Well, is it the vessel? I don't think it's the only vessel. There's so many interesting things. Over the weekend, I was with the woman who runs the UN Women's Program, UNIFEM. And she was talking about the networks that they have online for women in conflict zones.
Hmm.
And that they have women from all over the world who are sitting inside of wars, but who in some way or another can communicate through the web or through cell phones, who are acting as support groups to each other. And they're trying to sort of build that out. Over the weekend, I was also with Ono Perbu, who's an Indonesian activist, who has built this kind of whole extra legal structure of tech activists and probably about 4 million people in Indonesia are involved in kind of Wi-Fi networks and, you know, building their own hosting, you know, for web pages and email lists and thousands, by the way, of Yahoo groups lists for Indonesians that they constitute the second superpower as well.
You've puzzled about development for a long time. What's the connection here? Is there one? International development in the poor part of the world. Business to the 4 billion. Innovation for the next 5 billion, as another friend of mine says. What's the connection?
Well, there is really a connection. If we want to really create not only the second superpower, but kind of the creative superpower or the real superpower, superpower meaning that we have the superpower to actually solve world problems, we have to involve more of the people on the planet. I mean, right now we have an economic system that involves maybe 300 million or 500 million people out of 6.3 billion going to 10 billion if we don't kind of get population under control. And so we have to start thinking about a world economy that works for everybody. I mean, that's the other side of this terrorism issue. You know, it really does, I believe, come out of desperation and come out of this incredible sense of being poor in the world these days when media lets you see how the rich live. And actually be very intimate with movie stars and others from the wealthy world, but be desperately poor. And that's just not tenable. So we need a world economy that works for everybody. We also need a world economy that doesn't destroy the planet. And so business to the 4 billion, or some people call it bottom of the pyramid businesses, are about trying to engage the rest of the world in economic activity that also makes sense.
What's your hope? What's your ambition for BloggerCon?
I would love it if BloggerCon could showcase how activists of various stripes can be enabled by technology to join with others to shape a wiser and more creative world.
How will we do it?
I think we do it by listening to each other's human voices. I think we do it by taking our best, most precious, but also slightly transgressing kind of ideas and pushing them forward through blogging. So we kind of advance the frankness and the openness of dialogue. I think we do it by trying to live out values of, you know, dialogue and understanding and love on the web.
Love already.
Yeah.
I like it. I love it. Jim Moore, thank you. And I look forward to BloggerCon and doing it with you.
Great. Thank you.